Well, the story of Major League Baseball in Kansas City is a story of how the city wound up luring a professional team here, then later landing an expansion team. The Royals came along in 1969 after a U.S. Senator from Missouri, Stuart Symington, put the squeeze on Major League Baseball. More on that a little later. But first, the story of how a team called the Philadelphia Athletics came to our fair town.
Bill Haley and his Comets.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock.
1955 was a year of firsts. Rock Around the Clock was the first rock and roll song to top the charts. Eisenhower was the first president to televise a news conference. And Major League Baseball, which for 50 years stopped at the Mississippi, for the first time moved west.
Kansas City is known, too, for its baseball, for the athletics who were transplanted from Philadelphia to grow strong and sturdy in the rich, fertile soil of the mighty Midwest.
That's a little bit of the A's in Action, a half-hour promotional film broadcast on local television. The truth is, Kansas City was very well known for baseball. Some of the best players ever played here. Satchel Paige and Hilton Smith pitched for the Monarchs. Mickey Mantle and Phil Rizzuto played for the Blues, as the two future Hall of Famers worked their way up through the Yankee farm system.
Kansas City is noted for its beef business, the most flourishing in the nation, and for 10-story towers filled with golden grain. And how would you like your Kansas City steak, sir?
But by the 50s, Kansas City longed to shake its image as a cow town, and city fathers knew a big league baseball team would help. After 2 years of political infighting, family feuding, and backroom deal-making, which is a whole story unto itself, Kansas City finally lured the venerable A's from Philadelphia to play a municipal stadium.
The Kansas City A's drew like 1.2 million people that first year in a stadium that, you know, only had capacity of about 31,000 people.
Jeff Logan is the president of the Kansas City Baseball Historical Society. To seal the deal with American League owners, Kansas City had to promise to draw 3 million fans in the first 3 years the A's were here. Somewhat of a miracle for a town that was then, and is now, among the smallest in big league baseball. Logan says everyone pitched in to sell season tickets, the Chamber of Commerce, politicians in both states, and the newspaper. And when the team finally arrived, there was a bit of magic.
They flew over the city, and they just circled the city and circled the city with that plane because they could see fans out there cheering for the plane to arrive. That's how exciting it was for the A's to come to Kansas City.
But for one teenager from Brookside, the A's would change his life, even though he didn't quite know it at the time.
Just never occurred to me that it was anything special or unique.
Alex George was signed by the A's in 1955, soon after he graduated from Rockhurst High School. At 16 years, 11 months, he was the sixth youngest man to ever play in the major leagues. Now 76 and retired in Prairie Village, George still has the trim frame of a shortstop. While he played 8 seasons in the minors, his major league career with his hometown team amounted to 10 at-bats and one hit. This is 22nd in Brooklyn, and I'm standing by a plaque that marks where the main entrance was when Alex George played in Old Municipal Stadium. Baseball has always been a part of the Kansas City landscape, but big league ball, George says, was something else altogether.
My dad would pack us in the car, and we would drive down Brooklyn Avenue past the ballpark during a game. There'd be 10 or 15 other cars that would just be driving back and forth and enjoy the thought that they had a major league team.
And says Jeff Logan from the Baseball Historical Society, the A's move to Kansas City opened up the whole country for Major League Baseball. When the A's drew over 1 million fans in 1955, it was a signal that there was money to be made in the West, and it paved the way for the Dodgers to leave Brooklyn for Los Angeles and the Giants to leave New York for San Francisco.
It's funny that because of the Kansas City A's, we're playing the San Francisco Giants in the World Series.
It's a long, hard trip from a brand new franchise to a major league.
While the A's stayed in Kansas City for only 13 seasons, Alex George believes they opened the door to the Chiefs, the Royals, and every other major league sports team to ever play here.
It meant a lot then, and it still means a lot to have the team here.
Baseball fans of the mighty Midwest who ask nothing better than a...
Sam Zeff, KCUR News.
And a chance to watch their Kansas City A's in action.
And joining me now to talk about the history of how Major League Ball came to Kansas City are Sam Zeff of KCUR, whose piece you just heard. Sam, welcome back.
Steve, thanks.
Also here is Jeff Logan. He's president of the Kansas City Baseball Historical Society, and you heard his voice in that piece as well. Jeff, good to have you.
I'm glad to be here, and nice to meet you, Steve.
George Toma joins us, too. He's a longtime Royals groundskeeper. He lives in Westwood. And, George, good morning to you.
Good morning, everybody there, and good morning, everybody, and your listeners.
Well, Sam, just how big a coup was it for Kansas City to lure the venerable A's from Philadelphia?
Well, you know, there was a just like everything in Philadelphia, it's steeped in just ugly politics. The A's were a charter member of the American League in 1901, always controlled by Connie Mack, who was the owner manager. But by the 50s, the team was doing poorly. It was losing both games and a lot of money. The old man was ailing, and there was a schism in his family about what to do with the team. There were business people in Philadelphia who tried to get money together and keep the team there. Arnold Johnson, who was a real estate magnate who was in business with New York Yankees, eventually bought the team. Really against the wishes of most of the other American League owners. But the Yankees, who dominated the American League, certainly dominated baseball, pushed a lot of buttons in the back room, moved a lot of levers, and got the A's here.
And the Yankees would have wanted that. Why?
The Yankees, they were in business with Arnold Johnson, and Johnson owned both Blue Stadium back then, which then turned into Municipal Stadium, and also owned Yankee Stadium. Ah. So there was a big real estate deal. So the Yankees stood to make money on this real estate deal. Kansas City had floated bonds to buy the stadium and to put an upper deck on that. By selling the stadium to the city, both the Yankees and Arnold Johnson made money, and they also maneuvered that construction project, which was really Herculean. Mm-hmm. They put an entire second deck on Municipal Stadium in 90 days. That work got shuffled off to a construction company owned by the Topping family, who also owned part of the Yankees. So Kansas City was probably of all the cities that they thought about moving the A's to, Kansas City was at the bottom of the list as far as most of the league went. But because the Yankees, because they had so much throw weight, they were able to get the team here.
You know, Jeff, so given all that, Jeff Logan, that this notion that no team had ever moved west of the Mississippi before, how big a surprise was it that Kansas City wound up with this franchise?
Well, I think it was a major surprise.
Yeah.
We had no other professional sports teams. We had the Monarchs, of course, and they were a professional team, but not an MLB or a professional football team. So, yeah, it was a big surprise. But for Kansas City, it was a gateway to professional sports.
And the town was totally lit up, as Sam mentions in the piece, by the fact that we had a baseball team here.
We had professional sports, period, and we made it into the big time.
Yeah.
We were big time. When you have you look at cities today that don't have professional sports are still fighting to get professional sports teams. We did it in 1955.
You know, George Toma, you started your Kansas City career back in 57, you know, caring for Municipal Stadium, the old stadium over at 22nd and Brooklyn, where the Athletics played. Describe that stadium for us, for those of us who never had the good fortune to step inside that stadium. What did it look like?
Well, actually, it was a beautiful stadium once they put the upper deck on. But the thing is, they had a bad playing field. I was a groundkeeper back in 1955. I'm a coal miner from Pennsylvania, Wilkes-Barre area. And back in 1955, I was working for the Detroit Tigers in Buffalo, New York. And that was also the home of the Jacob brothers, who had a lot of stadiums as a concessionaire. And I used to see working in Buffalo trailer trucks coming up to the stadium and loading equipment, and I would ask them, where are you going with all that equipment? And he says, we're going to Kansas City because they have a franchise, and that was in 1955, and I never thought after that that I would end up in Kansas City.
How did you wind up here, George?
Well, actually, I worked for the Detroit Tigers, who owned the Buffalo Club, and then in 1956, they moved the Buffalo Club to Charleston, West Virginia, in the American Association, the AAA team, and I worked there in 1956, and in August of 1957, John McHale, the president and general manager of Detroit, called me and told me that they just gave Kansas City permission to talk to me about the head groundkeeper's job there. So he said, go up to the press box and get on the phone and call Park Carroll and make arrangements to go out there. But before I called Park Carroll, I called Amo Bozzard, the head groundkeeper for the Cleveland Indians, who I worked for in the past and was one of my mentors, and asked him, I told him I had a chance maybe to go to Kansas City, and Amo told me to stay out of Kansas City. He says, I'm in there twice or three times a month trying to get that field ready for Lou Boudreau, the manager of the Kansas City A's. He says, don't go out there because in the springtime it'll flood you out. It gets so hot in the summertime, it'll bake you out. So finally, I made arrangements, went out there on Labor Day of 57. In the meantime, too, the Bob Houseman, who owned the Denver Bears, wanted me to go out there and work for him in Denver. So I stopped off in Kansas City, looked over the field, and it was really a mess. It was really bad. It was more weeds than grass, really uneven. So the next day I met with Park Carroll and Bob Wachter, the stadium manager, and walked the field and looked it over. And the next day I flew out to Denver and looked at that field, and that was immaculate. So I went back to Charleston, West Virginia, and thought it over. And I says to myself, George, go to Kansas City, because if you mess it up, nobody would ever know.
So you couldn't lose, right?
Couldn't lose. So I took the job in November 1st of 57, and by 4th of July, they said we had the best playing field in baseball.
Wow. That's George Thoma's magic for you there. Sam Zeff, at what point did the notorious Charlie Finley take over ownership of the A's, and what kind of impact did he have on the team and on Kansas City?
Yeah, so Arnold Johnson unexpectedly dies a couple of years after the team moves here. Charlie Finley was actually involved in the deal in Philadelphia. He was trying to outbid Arnold Johnson for the team. A lot of these negotiations—
To keep it in Philly?
No, he would—to move it outside of mm-hmm. Philadelphia. But he was competing with the Yankees and the Arnold Johnson and the New York Yankees. Indeed, there was lobbying going on while Connie Mack, who was in his 80s at the time, was on his deathbed in his Mount Airy mansion in the Mount Airy section of Philadelphia. So Arnold dies. Charlie Finley buys the team. Always wanted to move the team out of Kansas City. But the guy was like an evil genius, right? I mean, long before, he came up with the Kelly green and gold uniforms. Before that, everybody, you wore white at home and gray on the road. And I'm sure Mr. Thoma knows, can tell you all the stories about the sheep and the mule and the rabbit. It was a menagerie.
Marketing stunts.
Right. He was a marketing genius. And part of bringing the Beatles to Kansas City was all part of the A's marketing. And finally, he got his wish, moved the A's out of Kansas City in 1967, where they landed in Oakland, where they are today.
Hey, Jeff Logan, what kind of publicity stunts would Charlie Finley pull? What kind of marketing ploys would he arrange to sort of get people out to that stadium to see what was a pretty awful baseball team?
Well, Charlie did it all. Charlie had every gimmick. He had, of course, Charlie O the Mule, where he'd ride it out front. Many times, one of the classic stories is he loved to take the kids on rides. And so he loaded a kid up for a ride. He rode him out around in right field and realized it was in the middle of a game. He didn't even realize the game was going on. So he's having fun. But they had Farmer's Night where they milked cows. They had I was just trying to think all the different kind of gimmicks they had. And you know, even George Toma here, he knows they had the little fire truck. And George would ride around in that fire truck and spray people with it. I wish I knew where the fire truck was.
Yeah.
And I've asked George that many times. But and, of course, he created Harvey the Rabbit that would pop up and hand out balls. Another thing they had is they had, before anyone, they still don't do it. They had little air valve things pop up and blow off the mound, the home plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the umpire didn't have to go out and sweep it off, which I think that's part of baseball. That's kind of the tradition. You want to sweep it off. But Charlie had thought that up, that you didn't need to do that. He could do that.
George, tell me, what kind of guy was Charlie Finley to work for?
Well, actually, I worked for three great owners. I worked for Charlie Finley. I worked for Lamar Hunt. And I worked for Ewing Kauffman.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to say, the players didn't like Charlie Finley and things like that.
Because?
But I would have to say that, one, Charlie Finley, as far as a ground crew or the little people, Charlie Finley was the greatest owner I worked for. Lamar Hunt to this day takes care of me. Also, Ewing Kauffman. But the difference there was that Charlie Finley didn't have hardly anybody in the office, and he ran everything. Where the Kansas City Royals and the Kansas City Chiefs had front office people.
Mm-hmm.
And in my book, I always said, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Man, I never worked for a bad owner. I never worked for a bad coach or manager. I never had seen a bad ball player. And the only thing I've seen about all that I've seen a lot of bad front office people. You know, you were the nitty-gritty dirt man. You were at the bottom, and a lot of these clubs, you know, had front office people, and they didn't treat the ground crew or other people working there right. But like I say, Charlie would take care of the kids. If they put the tarp down fast, which they did, Mel Allen would time them, the broadcaster for the Yankees. They put it down usually in about 45 seconds.
Huh.
Charlie would double their salary, which was maybe $2 a game, and send them down to Bryant's Barbecue. And on the way down, if there's any kids on the street, he said, take them in and feed them and tell Arthur Bryant to send them the bill.
George, the players didn't like him because why?
Well, actually, I guess he was trying to pinch the penny on their salaries and things like that.
Yeah.
But when school time came, he'd call them all together and said, I'm giving you $100 to go get school clothes, but you have to bring them back and show them that you've used that $100 for school clothes.
Wow.
Christmas game time was the same thing, but it was a different thing. But I say Ewing Kauffman treated me like a king, and Lamar Hunt treated like a king. And to this day, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Royals have helped me. And since 1963, the Hunt family has given my family season tickets all the way up to this year.
Wow.
Every August, season tickets come, great seats and preferred parking. So
wow.
The Hunt family and Finley and Kauffman has taken care of me. The only thing, the difference was in there that something the Royals front office and the Kansas City Chiefs front office, you know, you were dirt. But right now, you know, it's a pleasure to go over to work with David Glass. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Dayton Moore, it's a different story right now. I mean, it's a different operation, but
we're talking this morning. George, hang on a second. George, we're talking about how Kansas City got the Royals, and as the team progresses in the World Series. If you want to join our conversation with your memories of the A's and Old Municipal Stadium, what was it like? What do you recall about all of that? 816-235-2888 is our number. Again, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Jake from South Kansas City. Good morning, Jake.
Yes, pleasant good morning, gentlemen. And just one quick one I thought of. Sam Fuld, or Gold, died here recently, was a big part of the history of baseball here. And then did Mr. Toma reside down the left field line or right field line in the old ballpark for a short time? Did you have an apartment out there, George, was the story?
No, we just worked long hours, you know, in those days. Like I became a groundkeeper, but from 1957 all the way to I left in 1999, I never had an assistant. Hmm. You know what I mean? Now Trevor Vance, which I hired in 1985, has a few assistants and a ground crew. But we had to do it all for baseball, football, and soccer. We had to do it all with high school boys from Lincoln, Central, and Paseo. Hmm. And they gave us the best baseball field in the game, the best football field in the game, and the second best soccer field in the world. And all three sports were played on one field. And the thing about it, we never resoldered the field those events. And they said it was a top, you know, three in the sports. But we give credit. Nobody has ever worked for me. They all work with me. And it was all high school kids. I mean, in my days, I had a screen 20 ton of infield dirt myself in the wintertime and 60 ton of top dressing in the wintertime. So it's not like today where everything's right there for you. We were the pioneers, like the pioneers went through Kansas City out west.
Sam Zeff, I want to go back to the story here. The A's leave Kansas City in 67. How did the city react to being baseball-less once again?
I think there was a collective depression.
Boy, I bet.
Actually, you know, all of a sudden they become a big league city. You know, without the A's, there's certainly no Kansas City Chiefs. There's no Kansas City Royals. The A's opened the door to everything. Yeah. There was no love lost between Charlie Finley and local leaders. Baseball, Major League Baseball, had been planning on expanding sometime in the early 70s, 72, 73, adding teams. Then Missouri Senator Stu Symington, who was in his third or fourth term at the time, powerful member of the Senate, goes to Major League Baseball and says, look, right now Major League Baseball is exempt from antitrust laws in the United States. Stuart Symington went to Major League Baseball and says, you're going to get a team in Kansas City. You're going to get a team in Kansas City in 1969, or we're going to start holding hearings. We're going to have legislation to take that exemption, that antitrust exemption,
hardball.
Away.
Right, hardball.
Very hardball. Major League Baseball scrambled expanded into Kansas City in 1969 and then into Seattle in 1969 with the 1 year that the Seattle Pilots played in Seattle before they moved to Milwaukee to become the Brewers.
Wow. And I gather, Jeff, that it's fair to say that the A's wound up opening the door here for pro football in Kansas City. Why was that?
Well, Lamar Hunt, of course, owned the Dallas Texans. He's looking for a place to move. They already have the Dallas Cowboys. They don't want to be competing against the Cowboys forever. So they scouted the country. And they went all over and they said, Kansas City's a great place. And the only reason they had to have somewhere that could at least seat 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the main factor. And that's, you know, as Sam said, when they built that stadium expansion, what, you know, provided
the
gateway.
The second decade municipal you're talking about.
What
yeah,
provided the gateway for the Chiefs to come here. And, you know, you're talking about Stuart Symington. His famous quote was, Oakland's the luckiest city in the world since Hiroshima. Getting Charlie Finley in the A's. That's his famous quote. You know, but, you know, Charlie was a love-hate kind of guy. A lot of players, you know, I know George Thomas said some of the players didn't like him, but there were players that really loved him too.
Mm-hmm.
He was a complex man. And so it was a difficult decision for a lot of people. But as others have said, you don't get an expansion team in 1 year.
Yeah.
There was power behind that. And they left. Within the year, we had a team.
So as you look back on it, Jeff, was Kansas City more excited to get the A's in the mid-50s or the Royals in 1969?
Oh, I think by far the Kansas City A's in 1955. We had a professional team. So, you know, when we transitioned to the Royals, I remember when the Royals, we were naming the Royals, they were coming here. It was exciting, but we were still so down after losing the A's.
Mm-hmm.
And if we – a lot of people remember, the A's were right on the cusp of being great.
Yeah.
You know, they had so many great players. Reggie Jackson was here in 67 and Sal Bando and Burt Campanaris.
And they got great as soon as they left Kansas City,
yeah,
basically.
Won in all 1969, they were good.
Yeah.
And within just a few years, they win three world championships. And we're Royals fans sitting here in 1972 and three going, wow, there's our guys.
Yeah.
They're all there.
Well, finally today, our own Kansas City Symphony has pitched in their support for the Royals.